With the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Taylor Hillman.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. The World Ag Expo wraps up today, and subsequently, Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue finishes his tour of California today as well in Gilroy. He'll be touring Uswege Farms this morning, and I'm sure our good friend Pete Aiello over there will be a wealth of knowledge for the secretary and tell him all about their labor challenges. Aiello has been trying some new things to mitigate that, and we hope to connect with him either later today or tomorrow for a recap of the tour and get his input. Our top story today is about one of Purdue's stops in particular from yesterday's agenda. The California Farm Bureau Federation was able to usher Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue around the state yesterday on a multiple stop tour. CFBF President Jamie Johansson said a stop at the San Luis Reservoir may have been the most important.
He's going to get an overview of both the state water project and the federal water project, and that's an important reservoir to tell that story of what we could be doing in California as long as we can fill that reservoir.
Johansson said it's good to show Secretary Perdue the relationship between those two projects and the legislation, albeit temporary, that successfully helped the situation.
Yeah, and you don't realize the importance of both the state water project and the federal water project working together, because we know that the hang-up is in the Delta. And, you know, depending on biological opinions and everything, we need each other to help each other out in those critical times. And you're seeing that. So right now you had Congressman Valadeo, who was here and introduced the secretary, and the WIN Act we passed, I think, 4 years ago now, really is. So he's going to see where legislation, the California contingents like David Valadeo and our congressman here, get this act passed that allow to free up the water to get through the Delta. To suspend some of the regulations, but that's only temporary. So we have a permanent fix in one of Valadeo bills, HR 23, that we still have to work on. But he's going to see the success of when we work together to get the farmers the water they need.
We'll hear more from Johansson later on in the show. In today's specialty crop news, brought to you by the Almond Board of California. Find them online at almonds.com. Another reporting deadline for the Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program is around the corner. Perry Clausen of the East San Joaquin Water Quality Coalition talked to AgNet West at the Almond Conference about what the biggest changes for growers are in the program.
Well, it's probably some of the biggest changes affecting growers, and one that we're not going to be successful removing is that they're going to require that all domestic wells on irrigated properties are going to need to be tested for nitrates. And the reason for that is there is a program on the Central Coast that started in the Irrigated Lands Program in 2013 where that was mandated of all irrigated parcels. And they found about 35% of the wells had high nitrates above the drinking water standard. So they moved that regulation into this draft order. And as much pushback as they're going to get, it doesn't look like the state board is going to remove that mandate. So the other changes that they are proposing that are likely not going to be removed is on the nitrogen management plan that we as growers fill out on our farms and use for our planning. We'll also have the addition of your estimated applied water, applied irrigation water, and an estimate of your ET for your crop in the upcoming growing season. With the idea, we suppose, we're not real clear about this, that will bring into the conversation with your crop advisor or other agronomist how much water you use and is used by the crop compared to how much water you apply. So it's an inexact number for managing, but the intent of the Water Board is they want more attention by growers paid to irrigation, because there's been so much emphasis by the agronomists that it's not just what you put on the crop for nitrogen, it's how you irrigate as well.
That brings us now to Brian German, who has more with Clausen on the recent order approval for his region.
The State Water Resources Control Board adopted significant revisions to the Eastern San Joaquin River Watershed Agricultural Order that will have a significant impact on all irrigated regulatory programs statewide. The order dictates that coalitions must submit grower and field-level nitrogen management and application data that will be concealed by an anonymous identifier to the Central Valley Water Board. The board also made it very clear that a regional board has the authority and expectation to require a coalition to disclose a grower identity at their discretion. Executive Director for the East San Joaquin Water Quality Coalition, Perry Clausen, noted the precedential nature of the order.
This order is different in that the state board has been trying to align the agricultural irrigated lands programs that are in place throughout the state and try to have a consistent program in all the regions where there's agriculture. So that there's many of the provisions in this East San Joaquin order have statements at the end that say this is precedential, or components of this are precedential, or the regional board in that area can adjust them, but the main point is precedential. It will then be adopted by the regional boards into the other coalition's orders.
Clausen was one of the many speakers who presented information at the 2018 World Ag Expo at the International Agri Center in Tulare. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Asking for feedback from growers on their website is part of Agriculture Secretary's Western push this week. Rod Bain has more.
The Secretary of Agriculture continues his West Coast swing midweek with stops in the Golden State.
And we're trying to look at every regulation that may impede your productivity. I want to hear from you very candidly what's working, what's not working.
Secretary Sonny Perdue at the World Ag Expo in Tulare, California, Tuesday, hosting a town hall meeting. His solicitation of feedback on various ag and regulatory issues continues at several California farms through Thursday. A similar itinerary for the secretary occurred earlier in the week in Nevada, including a speech at the National Grocers Association Convention in Las Vegas.
The USDA, we're going to push for 28 deregulatory actions, no final regulatory actions in the queue. These actions alone, we believe, will save over $56 million just this year, and we're just really getting started. I want to hear from you about that. If you go to the USDA website, we've got usda.gov/regreform, where you can send us your ideas.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AgNet West's Farm City Newsday. More agriculture news for you now. Check out what's new for crop insurance this year before the deadlines at the end of February and mid-March. Stephanie Ho reports.
If your risk management strategy includes crop insurance, you need to be aware that this season's purchase deadlines are fast approaching.
We do have sales closing dates on a number of spring-planted crops, and that's February 28th or March 15th.
That was Rob Johansson, USDA's Acting Deputy Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation. He urges producers to talk to their crop insurance agent, especially to discuss some of this year's changes.
We did offer increased flexibility to producers by removing the June 1 certification deadline from the conservation compliance provisions. We also allow policyholders to choose different unit structures by practice, by either irrigated or non-irrigated.
Meanwhile, he also pointed to a change in insurance plans for livestock or livestock products.
The House and the Senate agreed to remove that $20 billion cap on insurance for livestock, and that will offer livestock producers and producers of livestock products more options going forward with the crop insurance programs.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Well, in today's livestock news, 10 Republicans and 10 Democrats in the U.S. Senate have introduced legislation that would prevent farms, ranches, and other agricultural operations from having to report livestock manure data under the Comprehensive Environmental Response, Compensation, and Liability Act, otherwise known as CERCLA, the law that governs toxic Superfund sites. National Cattlemen's Beef Association Chief Environmental Counsel Scott Yaker is pleased with this bipartisan legislation.
I think this goes to show that this issue really is something that Congress wants to fix. Now, I'm not going to say it's been easy to get to this point. It's taken a lot of hard work, not only from NCBA and other D.C.-based ag groups, but a lot of the grassroots support that comes out from our state Cattlemen's Association and other state affiliates that are out there doing the actual work on the ground to reach out and talk to their senators to tell them that this is an issue. That is so important, and it's really shown itself here to be critical and getting support from both Democrat and Republican senators, and it's paying off. So I just want to say thank you to all those out there who have worked with us on this to make this happen.
And Yaker explains what the legislation known as the Farm Act, the Fair Agricultural Reporting Method Act, does.
Plain and simple, the Farm Act exempts agriculture from having to report poop smells to the government under the Superfund law. That's what it does. So it's a clean shot. It's a kill shot to get rid of these requirements off of the books so that producers, farmers don't have to report poop smells to the Coast Guard under CERCLA.
Now, the current court-ordered stay was extended until May 1st, and Yeager says they will be working to try to get this legislation through by that time.
The new deadline is in May 1st, and that's what we will be working towards to get this thing solved in Congress. So we've got a little bit of extra time here, right? And we feel grateful that the court's been able to delay this a little bit more. But it is going to be a hefty lift to get this passed through Congress before then. But we will be doing everything we can within NCBA and working with our state affiliates to get as much support for this bill as standalone legislation as we can, as well as looking at other opportunities for where we can incorporate this language into a must-pass bill.
Yeager encourages producers to contact their legislators about getting on board to support the Farm Act and get it through by May 1st. And the National Pork Producers Council is urging Senate leaders to schedule confirmation votes on four long-languishing Trump administration nominees to USDA positions. In a letter, NPPC is urging leadership to move quickly to schedule votes on the four USDA positions, which are important to U.S. producers and for American agriculture. NPPC wants Greg Dow confirmed as the chief ag negotiator for the Office of U.S. Trade Representative, Bill Northey confirmed as Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation at USDA, Stephen Vaden as USDA's General Counsel, and Andrew Wheeler as Deputy Administrator with the Environmental Protection Agency. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
Anybody who reads the paper or watches the news on TV knows that vast amounts of every crop farmers grow is exported. It keeps American farmers in business. It takes a lot of big ships to transport all those crops. Now, here's something you may not know. All that stuff on all those ships going all over the world is very likely to cause your food bill to go up. You see, the shipbuilding industry is not building a whole lot of ships. That means shipping costs are rising. And any industry involved in the food business that experiences a price increase will certainly pass that higher price along to the consumer. These higher food prices will be felt more by the importing countries, but it will be affected here at home. Here we go again. And that's AgriView for today. Everett Greiner, AgNet West.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can always get the latest agriculture news from around the state and the nation at our website, agnetwest.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. I'm Taylor Hillman. In today's interview segment, we stopped by and talked with AeroVironment at the World Ag Expo. The company has been producing drones for the military for 30 years and has now shifted its focus to agriculture, creating an easy-to-use system that's straightforward and fast to deliver results.
My name is Mark Defoe, Director of Sales for AeroVironment.
Okay, so let's start basics. Yep. Talk about the company, what you guys do.
Yeah, so AeroVironment's been around since the 70s. We're established by an aeronautical engineer, inventor. We have seven vehicles in the Smithsonian. So we've been known for our innovation. We've built multiple vehicles and systems that have been truly unique to the world. Now we're starting with our new product, which we're targeting for the agricultural market. That product is the Quantix, as well as our AV DSS system, which is our data analytics system that we'll be launching and starting to ship in the next couple of months, or next week, couple of weeks, excuse me.
Exciting times.
Exciting times.
So this is trying to describe this a little bit for our radio listeners. We'll have a picture of this on our website as well, but it's two-winged. Drone's got four propellers on it. Looks like it launches from the back end. You don't have to throw it or anything like that. And there's some, I'm guessing there's some design advantages to this.
Yeah, so it's a unique design. We call it a hybrid design. So it takes off and lands like a quadcopter would. So a vertical takeoff and landing. And then at 100 feet, we transition into a fixed wing. And then we fly our mission as a fixed wing airplane, which takes into account the efficiencies of forward flight. So we're able to cover 400 acres in 45 minutes in our flights, under perfect conditions, of course. And the system itself allows us to view data in real time as well. So once we complete that flight, we cover our areas, land, and we have what's called a quick looks with the system. And the bird will actually Wi-Fi over to the ground control system, a quick looks of your flight. And you will get an RGB, which is a true color image, as well as an NDVI image of your field right there in the field. And so that allows you to evaluate your plant health without having to make another trip out to the field and wait for your upload. It's not fully stitched. It's a partial stitch, and it's not the highest resolution, but it does allow you to do some work right there in the field. It also can confirm that you had a successful flight and your images are stored.
Yeah, that was one of the things that on a lot of the drone stories that I've done in the past is download time, getting processing that data, all that. Having this just letting you know it worked is kind of reassuring in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And the whole system is designed around ease of use. And the real ROI here today is time and efficiency. So we've designed the system to be basically used right out of the box. Kind of the concept is plug and play, right? You put the battery in, your SD card in, you set up your fields in DSS and on the GCS, and you fly those fields. And it's a one-touch, fly the field, and you essentially will create those fields on your GCS, and they're there permanently. And so once they're done and created, it becomes extremely easy to use and really time efficient.
Yeah, we're here at the World Ag Expo. You guys have some tablets out here showing some of the pictures and stuff, and that's exactly how it looks in the field. Is you'll be able to see this right there on your phone or a tablet or whatever you're using.
Yeah, absolutely. And the tablet, again, is also designed the same way. So it goes through its own system checks, checks if there's enough battery for the flight, and make sure all the GPS is working and everything is the cameras are cleaned and functioning. We have a pitot tube on top for airspeed. So it's a very, very technical piece of machinery. It is definitely a purpose-built piece of machinery, and it is designed for commercial use. It's not a toy, and it's built that way, but it's also built that anyone in the operation with a 107 license can go out and fly this thing. And once you push unlock and fly, it's fully autonomous. It does its whole mission and comes back and lands in the same spot.
It sounds like this was designed with ease of use in mind.
Absolutely. And we found that was a lot of the bottlenecks in adoption was the fact that drones are not necessarily the easiest thing to use. And when you try to incorporate a high-end sensor and then try and upload your data packages to an outside third-party analytics system, it becomes very complicated and difficult to get all of that communicating. And so that's why we came up with the concept of a full ecosystem that will allow you to do all of the data collect, and we will basically push the data all the way through ourselves and get you a finished product and get that data in front of people within 24 to 36 hours of flight so they can start evaluating at a really high resolution with a bunch of data analytics on the background.
So what are some of the things that growers can get from this? For someone who's never seen something like this, what can this tell you about your field?
Yeah, so it can tell you a lot. And what we've learned from our pilot projects is that just the change in perspective will change the way growers farm. And our group of early pilot projects and beta customers have all told us that just that change in perspective has allowed them to change their farming practices. And then on top of that, we go through and we process the data. We have five deliverables in our basic package. And in that basic package, you will have a standard RGB true color image, an NDVI image, and a GNDVI, which is the green scale of the NDVI, which is essentially the photosynthetic activity or chlorophyll mapping of the crop. We also do a percent canopy, and we do a percent anomalies. And so we have a canopy and anomaly layers. We'll have reports that go with those. You can track those flight by flight. We'll have graphical reports. We'll also have email and SMS messages that can go out to alert you. When your canopy, you can set your canopy at a certain percentage. If it falls below that, you can get text and alerted as well as with the anomalies. And then with those data packages, for example, the anomaly layer, you still have to, as a grower, ground truth your crop. We can't tell you what that anomaly is today, but we can tell you that you've got a plant health issue out there. And once you go out, you walk the field, you figure out what that is. Let's say, for example, you realize you've got an anomaly out there and it's nitrogen. You can then create a shapefile out of that deliverable of our anomaly layer. You can export that into your farm management system and create variable rate applications from that.
Thank you, Mark. We're here with AeroVironment. If growers want to find out more, they can go to a website. What's your website?
It's avdroneanalytic.com. You can also go to our corporate site, av.com, and that'll be linked through there as well.
This is Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. I'm Taylor Hillman. In today's Almond Matters segment, brought to you by Valent, Agnet West Brian German talked with UC Cooperative Extension's David Dahl for an update on bloom and some practice reminders during this time.
David Dahl, nut crop pomology advisor for Merced County University of California Cooperative Extension.
Well, David, it looks like the considerably warm February we're having is contributing to an early bloom this year. So where are we in the process so far?
Throughout the San Joaquin Valley, we're probably anywhere between that 5 and 20% bloom. So we're still very early, and the cooler temperatures that kind of change and we're experiencing this week is going to slow down the progress. But I suspect that probably by the end of the week, we should be seeing more and more flowers open up on these trees, and that's going to, I guess, start the season for 2018. I think there's a lot of expectations that we'll have a good crop based on the weather. It looks to be relatively clear. But one thing to keep in mind when we're in flowering, especially when it's a little earlier than normal, is that the risk of frost increases. So keeping an eye on those nighttime temperatures to make sure they don't drop below the critical temps for the various stages of almonds is important. And that can range anywhere from 26 degrees at bud swell to pink bud to about 28 to 29 degrees once you're in petal full stage.
And what are some of the things that growers should be keeping in mind as bloom picks up?
With us coming into pollination, it's important to keep bees in mind. So they are in our fields. They're actively working these fields. And in the morning, especially with the cooler temperatures, they're not going to be as active. But as those hives warm up, the bee activity will. This means that we should try to time our sprays that we're making into our fields to be applied when the bees aren't active. So this may be later in the evening or into the nighttime hours when we make these variety of fungicide and maybe nutrition type sprays. Now, other things to keep in mind when we're trying to manage bee health is trying to avoid tank mixing too many things into that fungicide spray. We definitely don't want to include any type of insecticides unless we're utilizing BT for peach twig borer control. We want to avoid any additional surfactants unless it's on the fungicide label to apply. Generally, we just want to keep that spray as targeted as possible for the pest or disease we're trying to go after. Other things that we can keep in mind is that we maybe want to provide some water for the bees with it being a little bit drier than normal. That's a hard task to request, but it's something that should be considered if we're not seeing any puddles or any open sources of water for bees. There's also a whole lot of other things that help protect your bees listed on the Almond Board website, and I would encourage people to go take a look at that list to look at more of a consolidated resource for that's been developed for farmers. That's been developed by the University of California as well as other researchers across the U.S.
We head back more now to my interview with California Farm Bureau President Jamie Johansson, who hosted Ag Secretary Perdue's town hall meeting at World Ag Expo on Tuesday.
Jamie Johansson, California Farm Bureau President.
Jamie, we're here at World Ag Expo. You just got done hosting the town hall with Secretary Perdue. How'd it go? You think you got a good representation? Heard a lot of questions about dairy. We're in Tulare, of course, but how'd it go?
The secretary is... open and honest, and that's what every farmer wants, and as a former governor, but also as a farmer, he knows that farmers, we're going to be a little skeptical when the politician is up there, but he has shown us nothing. This is his second visit that I can recall to California, last being just a couple months ago, but has shown nothing more than being open and honest and telling us what the challenges are, because we all want solutions, same day solutions and stuff, but at the end of the day, we want solutions that are going to stick, maybe last for a generation or so, and so we just want that honesty of this is what we're going to do. And he started that process because we talked a little bit about the regulations and the one and two for the Trump administration talking about for every regulation they want to get rid of two regulations, and over the course of this administration to this point, for every regulation that's come on the books, 22 of them have gone off the books, and no more important to California farmers than the Waters of the U.S. rule, which we're seeing this administration work on.
To get more information on topics you've heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also follow AgNet West on Twitter and Facebook with @AgNetWest. Follow Brian German @BrianAgNetWest and Taylor Hillman @TheManOfTheHill. This has been Farm City Newsday by AgNet West.